Hello, my name is John Summers Flanagan, and I'd like to welcome you to the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. It's the podcast that everybody who wants to be practically perfect is listening to right now.
And I'm Sarah Polinchek, the co-host of the Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast. Welcome.
Today's show is about talking with children about life and death.
This is such an important topic, and I'm so glad we had a special guest, Dr. Tina Barrett from Tamarack Grief Resource Center in Missoula, Montana.
Yes. Now, one of the things that comes to mind is that when you talk about death, there are all kinds of fun, pithy quotes. And I'm going to mention one a little later by a famous person, but I made up one myself.
Oh, good. I love pithy quotes.
Are you ready?
Yes.
Death is unavoidable, so talking about death should be unavoided.
Oh,
is that good?
That's good.
It's not that good, but I made it up, so I feel a little bit of...
It's great, yeah, John.
Thank you. One of the things that's important for us to acknowledge is that there are many topics that parents struggle to talk with their children about. We talked about sex a while back, and it's hard for parents to talk about that, and it's also hard for parents to talk about death.
Both of which are unavoidable.
Unavoidable. I don't know. There's a quote about that. Sarah, do you have any examples that you can think of when a parent might need to just flow into a conversation about death with a child or children?
Well, it is unavoidable. I mean, I think most people have pets. Most people are going to have a family member or a loved one or a friend or a neighbor that's going to die at some point. For me, the first time I remember where we needed to go there in our family was we had a St. Bernard, who this was, I would say, a complicated situation because she reached the point where we needed to put her to sleep. And even that term, right? That's not a good term because that's confusing to kids. I think the best term would probably be that we are helping them die, maybe. It's a compassionate act. But my kids did not see it that way. And it became really complicated because they put a lot of blame on me for taking her down to our veterinarian and helping her die. It was really, really tough. And we had to work through all of that and complicated. And again, it was another one of those moments where I feel like I'm so glad that I have people like you and Tina that I've been learning from too in this community, because I really was able to stay stable with them through that. And it was hard.
Yeah, that's a great example. And like you said, it's a complicated example because the whole idea of having to, out of compassion, terminate the life of your dog, who probably was having a body that had stopped working right and was probably in great pain.
Yep.
And so you were doing a compassionate act with a pet, and yet it was hard for your children to understand that.
Right. And hard for me to make that decision too. So really complicated all around. But I think a good example of these things that are unavoidable and they're going to happen. And so for us to learn how to help our kids navigate those is a big, important thing.
Just having you tell that story brings to mind that when I was maybe six, we had a little dog in our family that then disappeared. And my parents said that it had run away, and that, and maybe 5 years later, maybe 10 years later, my parents like to avoid talking about hard things. They were wonderful parents. They are still wonderful parents, but they just had trouble talking about those things. And then they eventually said, well, actually, the dog had climbed into the swimming pool in our backyard and drowned. And, oh, wow, I wonder what the right thing to do then. I kind of wish they had been honest with us. Although it's also still a bad image or a hard image to think about. And so I would bet even as you talk about your dog, I talk about my memory of this. It's probably bringing up memories for people who are listening. And so I hope if you're out there listening and it's bringing up memories for you, that you'll follow the general advice of this show. And that is, don't just be alone with it, but take some time to talk with other people about death and life.
Yeah, and I just, you know, I think about your parents and why they might have told you that instead of the truth is they probably thought that they were helping you and easing your pain a bit. But we know as adults, it probably didn't. It probably hurt just as much that your dog was gone.
I know. And of course, every day we probably said, whoa,
where
did she come back?
Yeah.
You know?
And then a missed opportunity to get some understanding and strength, as we're going to be talking about later, from the process of going through such a tough thing.
So now it's really hard because I think in some ways there's the expectation that parents should know all the right things to say about everything.
Just like we do.
Right, of course. And sometimes we get it on the second or third or fourth try. But today we have an expert who's going to help guide us and other parents toward how to talk about death.
Yeah, again, Dr. Tina Barrett from Tamarack Grief Resource Center in Missoula, Montana. Welcome to the show. Can I call you Tina?
Please do.
All right, Tina. So we're going to start by having you share with us a little bit about what got you interested in death and dying and grief.
Originally, I worked in counseling in a lot of settings following attachment breaks and recovery, mm-hmm. and really looking at relationships and strength in relationships. I think it was years into the field before I really explored how growing up on a ranch and the losses you face and losing a grandmother suddenly in middle school and how it impacted my family and mm-hmm. my teenage years influenced my career and probably ultimately shaped founding a grief resource center.
Yeah, that's great. And remind me how long you've been doing this work.
About 20 years.
Oh, gosh. Okay, so we're very lucky to have you with us. This is a really difficult topic. I mean, can you kind of distill down what makes it so meaningful to you?
As we talk with parents and support parents, it turns out it seems to be a more difficult conversation or topic for us as adults than it is for kids. Grief is a natural part of life, and loss is part of the lifespan.
Yeah.
And it seems as we interact with people who are integrating profound losses into their life, it's very real and authentic and non-guarded, and we really get a chance to engage in some deep, meaningful, life-affirming conversations.
Yeah, wow. As you know, this is a show for parents, and since grief and dying is such a part of life, as you've said, how do you recommend that parents can answer big questions about death?
I think when our little ones ask us questions about death, it can be startling to us, and one of the most basic tips would be to give honest, simple responses. If our child's old enough to ask a question, we can trust they're old enough to receive honest, simple responses. We probably don't need to go into great detail mm-hmm. until they ask for more detail as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so, you know, one of the common things that I hear about is parents saying, oh, they just went to a better place. What do you think about that? I mean, really, if a three-year-old says, you know, where did my grandma go? What do you think about a better answer would be?
I think that it's tempting for us to use euphemisms as we talk with kids about death or use terms that make us feel better or couch the reality mm-hmm. of death. And it's out of great intention. So that's the most important thing I want people to hear is I know we're trying to take care of our kiddos and our goal is to do it ever better. What we want to do with kids is always couple our spiritual understandings or our euphemisms with biological understandings, that the body has stopped working. It doesn't eat, it doesn't breathe, it doesn't experience pain.
Okay. So is there an age where you wouldn't say that, like it would just be too big?
There's not an age I would not say that, because as you raise your child, you want them to gain this information from you. If they're going to hear about the death of someone or something they've loved, you also get this opportunity that that's done in a comforting manner from someone they trust. And so you don't want to hold back on that. You just offer simple, honest responses and more as they get older.
Okay. That sounds great. And I'm wondering about what is the downside? You know, what if we don't? What if we just kind of hope that they won't get it or won't notice? And I was going to say don't notice, but that's not, they're going to notice that someone's gone. But what if we just don't explain it to them, or we do use those kind of cute little ways? What's the result of that?
And Sarah, I think that can be incredibly confusing for kiddos as they try to make sense of someone going to sleep and never waking up. They can start to develop sleep challenges.
Oh, sure, because they think, I'm going to sleep. What if I don't wake up,
absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Or if someone's going to a better place and the dog went to a better place and grandma went to a better place and the goldfish went to a better place, let's go to this better place. It's not unlike going to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just very confusing.
Okay. So you're not saying there's really any downside to just saying the truth.
I really appreciate the language of Maria Trazzi, who says, and I think Mr. Rogers said, the unmentionable is unmanageable. We really believe that if we don't talk about it, we're giving kids the message that this is a taboo subject for us, mm-hmm. but they're probably going to gather information from other people or other places and begin to piece things together. And whether it's truthful information mm-hmm. or if it's their stories that they're just desperately trying to make sense of the world, it can be misleading in different ways.
Yeah. Will you say that again? If you don't...
The unmentionable is unmanageable.
Oh, that's really nice. I like that.
So this idea of we can talk about it, it makes it easier for us to cope with.
Okay. That's great. And how would you talk to a 2 or 3-year-old different than you would talk to, say, a 14 or 15-year-old? I mean, how does that language look different? And are things that you wouldn't say for younger kids? Or how does that look?
The language we would use with a really small child would be very biological. Let's use the example of the goldfish because it's so many children's classic first experience facing death. Mm-hmm. And the goldfish has died. And it's tempting also for the teacher or the parent to replace the goldfish rather than to move into these conversations.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Because we want to protect our kiddos. We just wish that our children don't have to face hardship. And they do. So first of all, we want to move into the conversation really believing kids are so resilient. And then perhaps with a 3-year-old, we might say, not unlike your tennis shoes that wore out and we couldn't use them anymore.
Mm-hmm.
This fish's body stopped working. That sometimes happens because of old age or sometimes because of an injury that's so bad that it can't breathe or can't, and with a goldfish.
I get you. That's okay. Yeah. Okay, and so we're really going to just talk about the biological piece, that your body has just worn out, it's not working anymore, right? That kind of language will work with all ages, it sounds like.
And it's very okay to couple our biological understanding with our spiritual or faith-based understanding. If that gives us strength, it can be very confusing to use that in isolation. So we might say, Grandma has died. Her body has stopped working. She doesn't experience pain anymore. She doesn't breathe and she doesn't eat.
Mm-hmm.
And we believe she's in a very peaceful place.
Yeah. Okay. So what I hear you saying is that if that's a part of our family value and we're already using that kind of language, then that should be woven into the language with regards to death, but maybe not if we're already not talking about religion in our family. Is that kind of what you're saying?
It certainly doesn't need to be brought in. I think what we want to imagine is that if it's important for us, if it's a source of strength for us, a piece of our faith, a piece of how we make sense of the world, to not just bring in the spiritual understanding, but to always couple it with that biological understanding. And as a child gets older, they may have more questions, like help me understand what happened to the dog,
uh-huh.
help me understand more about this loss experience. And we would believe that if a child is able to ask the question, they're ready to receive the answer.
Yeah. Another thought I'm having is, I think as a parent, we just want to make it smaller because we just don't want them to hurt, right? My son, his rabbit died. And I can tell you, it was one of the times where I felt a little, I was glad to know you, actually, because I've learned some things from you over the years. And I really was able to be with him and validate this huge, huge experience for him. And I was so glad, because I think if I hadn't had that knowledge, my temptation would have been to really try to minimize and make it smaller. I don't know how I would have done that. So I think that was the biggest thing, is just really validating how much this hurts. And we can't fix it.
Absolutely. I think... We may say the only thing harder than being in distress ourselves would be seeing our child in distress. Oh. So we're just protecting them from that as much as we possibly can. Mm-hmm. And then to realize that our job as parents is probably also to help our children face distress in a way that's strengthening for them or makes sense of the world in a way that's meaningful to them, and to trust them to climb into the world, that we won't be there forever to protect them from all the bumps that life has to offer. And life isn't always fair. And it's not our job to make it fair, but it is our job for them to know we are there with them.
Right.
Through it, to validate their experience and to be curious about their experience and to support one another through our experiences.
That's really great. I'm going to just say one little phrase that you said, and I'm going to say it again, that face distress in a way that brings strength. I can feel that being a really big important thing for parents, especially when we it's hard for us to have our kids be hurting.
It's so hard.
Yeah.
And we care so deeply that your heart will be stretched at the same time, and you probably loved that rabbit too.
Right. Right.
So and then you're supporting a kiddo when your heart is stretched also.
Right. Yeah. And that's where we've talked in the show many times where we as parents need to get supports elsewhere, and this would probably be a good time.
To get support elsewhere, but also it's okay to model your grief, to say, I'm really sad too. How can we honor what this rabbit brought to us? There's a very dear book, The 10th Good Thing About Barney, that some people have read and shared, and just looking at what were 10 good things about this in our world, and to explore, like, what did we learn from this bunny?
Oh, that's really nice. So, Tina, anything else you can think of for parents as they are just navigating this difficult issue and talking and experiencing death with their kids?
I think the big thank you to parents, the best way we can support these kids is to support the parents.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of parents feel like they need to hide their grief to protect their children instead of recognizing themselves as the model of what am I going to do with this profound loss.
Mm-hmm.
And so encouraging parents to get their own support,
mm-hmm.
but also encouraging parents that there's not just one right way to do this. So to risk moving into the conversations and the activities around honoring a life and a loss in different ways,
mm-hmm.
for your kiddo, and knowing that will be very different for you. You might be someone that cries and wants to look at pictures, and your kiddo might not be a talker. Kids are going to make sense of their world much more through play. So to give your child permission to grieve in their way.
Okay. I'm hearing you say, too, is that if it's a significant loss, if it's their grandma, which might mean that it's the parent's parent, right, that we can let them know that we're sad, too. We don't have to shield them from our own pain.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I think sometimes we as adults tend to think that we don't want to scare our kids or have them think we're too fragile.
We do have a tangle that if someone cries, is that fragility or is that strength that allows us to cry? And our hope would be that people experience their center enough that if I cry or if I laugh or whatever large emotion I may experience, that I will come back to a grounded place. So how do we help our kids just feel comfort and centeredness so they have permission to explore big emotions and feel safe in the world?
So great. Tina, this has been a great conversation, so important, and I thank you so much for your experience and your wisdom today.
Thanks for supporting parents through this tricky stuff.
Sarah, as I listened to you and Tina talking together, one of my main takeaways was one of the first things Tina said was honest, simple responses. And I like all three parts of that. It's a response, right? And children need that response to any kinds of questions that they might have about death or their experience of the death of a pet or another important person in their life. I love the word honest and simple.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting there just seemed like a fabulous place for parents to start.
Yeah, you know, I caught myself. She talked so well about the biology and mm-hmm. that we can always go back to the biology that the bodies give out after a certain amount of time. And that's just the part of the life cycle. And I think I have to admit that I've avoided that a little bit because I think I had this fear that maybe my kids would, you know, be too afraid that they would think about their own biologies or their, mm-hmm. Our biologies and that kind of thing. But really, the best message we can give to them is that we do everything we can. We wear our seatbelts. We eat good food. We do what we can to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the best we can do. And
right.
to avoid it doesn't change anything. So.
Right. And another phrase, you know, the body has stopped working.
Mm-hmm.
And that she said that the child should gain that information from you
mm-hmm.
about the biology, about the body getting worn out and stopping working.
Yeah.
And I really like that message, and I like the fact that she's being honest, simple, and direct
in her
response.
It's just real and true. And I can hear a conversation like that with a parent and a child feeling really connected.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. One last thing she said that just really resonated with me is it's easy to replace a goldfish. It's easy to replace a dog or a pet. It's easy to try to find a replacement for a loss that
mm-hmm.
the child has experienced rather than to deal with the pain and the hardship that comes along with the loss. And so maybe a new goldfish or a new dog is good eventually, but I kind of heard the message, let's deal with the hardship and let's show that we can deal with the hardship. That's a good thing.
I think, yep.
Okay. I think it's now time for us to do a cha-ching, and that is to share our money tips.
Okay. One of the things that she said, I hope I'm going to be able to repeat this, is the unmentionable is unmanageable. Ooh, I did it. I just really like that. I think that's a good mantra for us. I think, again, it goes back to our sex talk that we've had earlier.
Yeah.
That would be sometimes for some people unmentionable. Yeah. But we're going to make it mentionable. We're going to make it mentionable and therefore manageable. I really like that. It's simple and true.
All right. I have two money tips. The first one is sort of a long roundabout way of saying that everybody dies. And that is, there's a book that's called Everyone Poops. And of course, it's one of my favorites.
Great.
And that particular book is just about how it's so universal. And of course, death is universal too. And we should just acknowledge that everyone dies. And I'm reminded of a guy named Irvin Yalom, who's a famous existential psychotherapist. And he emphasizes how death is always rumbling underneath the surface. And here's a quote from him and his book, Staring into the Sun. He says, "Confrontations with death arouses anxiety, but also has the potential for vastly enriching life." And so what he's saying is that if we face it, in some ways it helps us to live our lives more fully. And so that's one of my money tips, is that let's acknowledge, embrace it. We have limited time here. Let's follow our passion, and let's connect with the people we love. Let's find the gifts that we have and try to enact them in our lives and seize the day, I guess.
Yeah. Shout out to that book. It's fabulous.
Yeah.
I think for any of the listeners, it's just a really good read. It is powerful for anyone because we're all in this together.
Right.
Everyone poops and everyone dies.
Maybe that's a new book title. And my other money tip is that if we do not talk about the hardships that Tina mentioned, then we are giving our children the message that we cannot handle them, indirectly or directly. And so I think it's best for us to be that role model who shows, I can speak to these issues directly, and we can handle the hard times together. And that's an important message. We're strong enough to handle this together.
Right. And I think every parent would agree we want our kids to be resilient. And one of the ways is to practice when they're kids, to giving them opportunities to build strength. So resilience, strength, yes.
How about a couple of resources?
Well, one of mine is The Fall of Freddy the Leaf by Leo Buscaglia. It's a nice picture book about, you know, life and death.
All right.
Yeah.
Cool. I have one that was recommended by Dr. Tina in our conversations with her. And the one she recommended is Death is Stupid by Anastasia Higginbotham. I can't say that without a British accent. Higginbotham.
I like the title, too.
Death is Stupid. It is.
Yeah.
I
agree.
Time for us to end our podcast, just like death, our podcasts end too. I'm so profound. I do want to say thank you to the Engelhard Foundation, to NPEN, the National Parenting Education Network. I also want to say thank you to the listeners because you have let us into your lives and shared some time with us, and we appreciate the fact that you have taken the time to listen.
Yes, and thank you again to Dr. Tina Barrett. The Practically Perfect Parenting Podcast is sponsored in part by the Charles Engelhard Foundation, audio engineer Mike Matthews, production assistant Joey Moore, and co-hosts Sarah Polinchek and John Summers Flanagan.